This is the first day of our 2011 Rohatsu session. We're getting a little feedback here. If we take into account all those worldwide who are participating in Sesshin during this week of December, Rohatsu amounts to a huge volume of Zazen. It's quite something to think that we here are a part of that. In Rohatsu, we commemorate the enlightenment, the life, the teaching of one of the most remarkable human beings who ever lived, the Buddha Shakyamuni. He was indeed human. He was born. He grew up. He matured. He grew old, feeble, ill, and eventually he died. He was special, but in the way that only a human being can be special. With his words and his deeds, he taught, persuaded, inspired, encouraged others to follow his way, the completely human path he had discovered. When we examine the story of the Buddha's life and teaching, we go back to the very dawn of Indian Buddhism, before Zen was ever heard of or even thought of. It is sometimes said, even by Buddhists, that Zen is not really Buddhism. The whole Mahayana approach implies that the original teachings of the Buddha, i.e. the Pali Canon, were incomplete. Well, that's an argument that I'm not qualified to address, nor do I think that it's relevant to our practice here. What the Buddha did say, and this is just about my favorite quote, "Do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it. Do not believe in anything simply because it is spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything simply because it is found written in your religious books. Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for many generations. But after observation and analysis, when you find that anything agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it." Observation, analysis, reason. Whatever accords with true reality or ultimate nature is a true teaching. He left the door open. Zen Buddhism in particular retains its great dynamism and continues to have a disproportionate impact on human affairs everywhere it is practiced, because we do not attach to any particular set of words and phrases, not even those of the Buddha. I believe it was Christmas Humphreys who once collected some Buddhist material into a book which he entitled A Buddhist Bible. There is no particular absolute truth written down somewhere. No amount of parsing out of scripture will uncover it. You can find true teachings many places that one might not expect to. Anyone who has read the works of Thomas Merton, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, Meister Eckhart, the poets Kabir, Rumi, or Wendell Berry, knows that wherever it comes from, whoever discovered it, it is still the truth of the great reality. Nevertheless, in Rohatsu Sesshin, we pay homage to Siddhartha Gautama, who taught us one thing that was and is not clear in the writings of those others whom I mentioned. He taught us the practice. He taught it in all that he did and all that he said. His life makes clear that the great truth is open to anyone who follows the way. It's not a matter of special grace or favor from without. It is not a matter of what you read or what others have discovered for themselves. It is a matter not of belief or faith, but of doing. Zazen is paying attention to a physical act of the physical body. Everything else follows. As Dogen and others never tire of pointing out, practice and enlightenment are not one whit separate. That in itself is the unfathomable mystery. The story of the great enlightenment is the story of Gautama's discovery of the practice of the way. The practice of the way. Intellectual study, followed by 6 long years of the most desperate ascetic methods, failed him. It was only when he took his seat under the Bodhi tree and said, "Never from this spot will I move," that Mara and all the forces of ego delusion were at last defeated. In the last several years at this center, the Rohatsu Teisho, primarily by Dainin Roshi, have followed the life and teachings of the Buddha from his youth to his struggles in his search for the truth, to his great enlightenment, to his 40-year ministry. The primary source has been a very readable book, The Buddha, His Life Retold, by Alan Mitchell. Mitchell was a physicist by training, but he was self-taught in Sanskrit and Pali. And his book is a retranslation of some of the Pali texts. Now, we come to his last days. The Teisho in this session will once again focus on the Buddha and his teaching. Not that they're really separate. 3 of them, 2 by Roshi and 1 by myself, will follow the Buddha in his old age, his final illness, and his parinirvana. And the other 2, beginning with this one, I'll address cases in the Wumenguan that directly concern the Buddha's teaching. So we begin with Wumenguan, case number 32. A non-Buddhist questions the Buddha. The case reads, "A non-Buddhist once asked the world-honored one, 'I do not ask for the spoken, I do not ask for the unspoken.' The world-honored one just sat still. The non-Buddhist said admiringly, 'The world-honored one, with his great compassion and mercy, has dispelled the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way.' Making a deep bow of gratitude, he departed. Ananda then asked the Buddha, 'What did that non-Buddhist realize that he so praised you?' The world-honored one replied, 'He is like a fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip.'" Wu Min's commentary. Ananda is the Buddha's disciple, but his realization is less than that of the non-Buddhist. Now tell me, how do they differ, the disciple and the non-Buddhist? A woman's verse. "Walking along the edge of a sword, running over jagged ice, you need take no steps, climb no ladder, just jump from the cliff with hands open." There are innumerable stories about enlightenment, Kensho, Satori, or whatever you want to call it. Some experiences are profound and complete. Others are shallow, just a beginning. Some may be triggered by a sight, others by a sound, maybe a blow or a shout, or perhaps just a quiet word, or maybe nothing in particular. Here we have a realization that happens in the presence of the Buddha himself. Many people, pilgrims, priests, kings, commoners, and crooks, came to deep awakening in the presence of the Buddha. But not everyone. The Buddha was a great teacher and guide, but he was not a miracle worker. For the most part, his disciples and just about everyone who walks this path work long and hard to come to the point of what has been called sudden illumination. It's a bit like an actor who works in the industry for years and years before suddenly becoming an overnight success. A non-Buddhist once asked the World Honored One, "I do not ask for the spoken, I do not ask for the unspoken." A non-Buddhist. Literal translation is one outside the way. What about this person who puts the question? Who is he? What was he like? And what was his condition? There are many speculations about him. Is he a Brahmin? A philosopher? A goat herd or what? He is you. He is me. He is everyone and anyone who comes to practice with an open mind and an open heart. I do not ask for the spoken. I do not ask for the unspoken. Do not ask for words. Do not ask for silence. Do not ask anything. Do not expect anything. Do not fear anything. Just sit. Just take your seat in the Zendo. Engage the practice and see what happens. See who and what you are, moment by moment by moment. On seeing the morning star, the Buddha said, "I and all beings have in this moment attained the way." All beings. So how could this person outside the way really be outside the way? Are any of us outside the way? Is there anyone or anything that could possibly be outside the way? Bernie Glassman puts it this way. The very notion that we are attached to something is primordial illusion. Or to put it another way, the primordial illusion is that we are deluded in the first place. Dogen says, "The truth appears, there being no delusion." So what is this enlightenment that we're always nattering on about? Is it a condition that is somehow different from what we are right now? Is there really any such thing? If not, then why does Dogen also say, "And yet if there is the slightest difference in the beginning between you and the way, the result will be a greater separation than between heaven and earth. If the slightest dualistic thinking arises, the mind is lost in confusion." The way is always there, and each one of us walks the way and is the way. We just don't know it clearly enough to trust that fact, to trust ourselves, and to trust our practice. And therefore we must doubt, and we must question. That question may begin as a superficial one, an intellectual puzzle, a conundrum. But if we continue to question, moo, or who, or the breath, or even just sitting. That question, which is beyond any words or concepts, works its way deeper and deeper to the very core of our being. A monk asked Zhaozhou, "Has the dog Buddha nature or not?" Wuan asked, "Why has the Western barbarian no beard?" Yun Men asked, "Why do you put on your 7-piece robe at the sound of the bell?" Innumerable monks and others ask, "What is the Buddha? What is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the West?" Questions all. What brings us to the question? It is the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. Anguish is everywhere. Suffering is the whip that brings us to the question and then to the practice. And the questioning has to continue until it goes beyond the need for an answer in the usual sense. It has to continue over and over and over until it leads to not knowing, and then to being okay with not knowing. This not knowing is not the opposite of knowing. It is sometimes said that there are different answers to the same question. But are the questions really the same? In case number 24, in the Wumin Quan, a monk asks Feng Shui, "How can I transcend speech and silence?" This monk is asking for information, opinion, maybe some notion of the truth. He's looking for something outside himself. He still seeks knowing. It is this, it is that. Here's what you do, here's what you don't do. Those are the kinds of answers that must ultimately be abandoned. The non-Buddhist says, "I do not ask for the spoken. I do not ask for the unspoken." This might be construed as a question, even though it is not in the grammatical form of one. On the other hand, it could be something else. It could be a profound expression, a realization. The non-Buddhist does not ask for speech. He does not ask for silence. He no longer seeks an answer. He seeks only what is. The World Honor One just sat still. He sat still. That is the Buddha's answer. That was the Buddha's great discovery. If we truly understand, if we understand that, if we see clearly, as did the non-Buddhist, nothing more need be said. Question and answer are this moment. Question and answer are the thundering silence of this moment. Zazen is not a mental exercise. We spend too much of our sitting thinking about sitting. In the Fukan Zazengi, Dogen gives us a minutely precise description of the physical act of Zazen. And he tops it off with, "Sit firmly as a rock and think of not thinking." How do you think of not thinking? By not thinking. Don't mentate. Just sit. Just sit as the Buddha sits. The non-Buddha said admiringly, "The world-honored one, with his great compassion and mercy, has dispelled the doubts of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way." Making a deep bow of gratitude, he departed. There is no telepathy going on here. No ESP. No miraculous transference of something or other. It is simply recognition, recognition, seeing clearly what you already know. That's really all Kensho is, or Satori, or whatever you want to call it. And that recognition is not a matter of figuring anything out. It is the difference between reading a sutra, trying to parse out the language and somehow decode the scripture, and the kind of instant, gut-level, intuitive sense that jumps out at you. One might read words of Dogen today that several years ago made no sense whatever, that now, oh, of course, that's what it's about. The non-Buddhist saw. He recognized. He saw the Buddha. He saw the Buddha completely. And therefore he saw Buddha, his own nature. And he was completely open to it. And he realized it, made it real in the very asking of the question. The Buddha too was completely open. At that moment there was no separation. There was a complete realization. It was not the Buddha's realization. It was not the non-Buddhist realization. It was just realization. There is no such thing as your realization or my realization. There is only realization. The eye with which I see God is the eye with which God sees me, says Meister Eckhart. So in that one moment, Buddha sees the non-Buddhist, the non-Buddhist sees the Buddha. And there is no Buddhist, no non-Buddhist. There is only Buddha. That's what is meant by the term transmission. In fact, transmission can happen only when there is no separation. Or more accurately, when this infinite and eternal non-separation is clearly seen. And then how can there be transmission of anything? And in expressing his gratitude, the non-Buddhist bows and departs. The teaching is over. Nothing more to be said, nothing more to be done. Ananda then asked the Buddha, "What did that non-Buddhist realize that he so praised you?" Ananda was a younger cousin of the Buddha, also his personal attendant and deeply loved disciple. But in scripture, he is something of an icon. He represents the sincere seeker who hasn't quite got there yet. He doesn't see clearly yet. Eventually, he does gain true insight and becomes the second ancestor after Mahakasyapa. But now he has to ask, what did that non-Buddhist realize that he so praised you? What did he see? What do you see in this moment? What do you hear, feel, taste, touch in this moment? Ananda wants to know if the non-Buddhist realized something. In that moment, was there something to realize and someone to realize it? How about this moment? The world-honored one replied, "He is like a fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip." This remark is based on the parable of the four horses from a collection of short sayings of the Buddha called the Anguttara Nikaya. Here's how Robert Aiken Roshi summarizes it. The one who learns that someone in another village is about to die and reflects on the transient nature of all life is like a horse who runs when it sees the shadow of the whip. The one who learns that someone in his own village is about to die and reflects on the transient nature of all life is like a horse who runs when it is whipped to the hare. The one who learns that someone in his family is about to die and reflects on the transient nature of all life is like a horse who runs when it is whipped to the flesh. And finally, the one who learns that he himself is about to die and reflects on the transient nature of all life is like a horse who runs when it is whipped to the bone. This is not about some New Age notion of sensitivity or about sympathy in the usual sense. It is, once again, non-separation. It is not about there but for the grace of God go I. It is there go I. This goes to the very heart of suffering. Anguish is everywhere. Suffering becomes the practice. The more one is open to suffering, the more vulnerable, the more suffering is seen as the way, the Tao itself. Every year at our center, we have a ceremony of aid in conjunction with the Fast for a World Harvest. Many of us actually do a complete or partial fast that day. It helps us open up to hunger and suffering, to become better horses. Note, however, that the Buddha's reply doesn't deal with Ananda's question, what did he see? He just said he is like a fine horse who runs at even the shadow of the whip. Ananda lived with the Buddha as his attendant for 20 years, yet he didn't realize the way until some time after Shakyamuni's passing. Why didn't the Buddha just give him a word, or a poke, chivy him along a bit? Why did he not just sit quietly? This is something we all have to face, and that is our individual karma. It cannot be laid out in detail. No one can even begin to list all the factors and influences that bring each one of us to this place and time. Each of us is a cumulative result of every event from the beginningless past, and each of us is the cause of every event into the endless future. All one can say is that Ananda was not yet ready, and the Buddha saw it. Wu Min's commentary. Ananda is the Buddha's disciple, but his realization is less than that of the non-Buddhist. Now tell me, how do they differ, the disciple and the non-Buddhist? Ananda is asking a factual question, asking for information. He's caught up in the delusion of our separateness, and he continues to struggle with this question after the Buddha's passing. Finally, one day, he brings his question to the Buddha's successor, Mahakasyapa, in case number 22 in the Wu Min Quan. Ananda asked Mahakasyapa, the world honored one transmitted the golden robe to you. What else did he transmit to you? Mahakasyapa said, Ananda. Ananda said, yes. Mahakasyapa said, pull down the flagpole at the gate. Pull down the flagpole. Once again, the teaching is over. This time it worked. After more years of struggle, Ananda is asking the real question. It may sound like the previous one. What did that non-Buddhist realize? But be careful. If you say that the non-Buddhist is better, or greater, or more advanced, or more enlightened, you are caught up in notions of time and space, high and low. If you say there is no difference, You ignore the fact. How will you answer? Woman's verse. Walking along the edge of a sword, running over jagged ice. You need take no steps, climb no ladder. Just jump from the cliff with hands open. Who is it that walks the edge of the sword and runs over jagged ice? Once you have jumped from the cliff, let go of body and mind, walking along the edge of the sword, or walking to the kitchen, running over jagged ice to Doksan is effortless. As this session proceeds, I'll bet by the fourth or fifth day, walking, bowing, sweeping, washing dishes will become effortless. This is what happens when we get out of our own way. That efforting part is just more delusion, more separation. What effort did the non-Buddhist exert? What effort did the Buddha exert? What effort did Mahakashyapa or Ananda exert in that moment? In your sitting, in your walking, waking, and sleeping, what effort is there really? Just get out of your way. Jump from the cliff, hands open. How? Just breathing. Just sitting. Just continue. Together with all beings, we realize the way.